The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 10 p.m., March 23rd, 2017. Enjoy the show.
Hello. Thank you for tuning in to K-Voice, a voice of the resistance. That's the letter K, voice. I'm Kelly. Thank you for joining me for the next half hour.
They're scrambling to find a bill that they can pass on the floor. I don't know if you want to call this, on Trump's part, a rookie's error. But you don't find a day and say, we're going to pass a bill. You build your consensus in your caucus, and when you're ready, you set the date to bring it to the floor. Rookie's error, Donald Trump. He may be a great negotiator. Rookie's error for bringing this up on a day when clearly you're not ready.
That was House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi rubbing the Republicans' nose in the dirt, and rightfully so. Despite the personal efforts from the president, and despite efforts from Eddie Munster lookalike Paul Ryan, their health care bill, which was supposed to go up for a vote Thursday night, was pulled. Now, I'm recording this on Thursday evening, so by the time this show airs tomorrow, they may have held a vote to pass it. But regardless, whether it does or not, this looks really bad on them. I mean, passing off a vote unilaterally when you have both the House and the Senate shouldn't have been that hard. But it was hard, and were the reason. Those fighting to maintain their health care fought hard, and at least for a time, our pressure has worked. We pushed the Republican bill to the left, which made the bill something the far right in the House would not vote for. And still, we put the fear into enough Republicans in those urban areas whose seats are at risk that they would not vote for the bill. Between them and the far right members who wanted to take more from the people, they knew that they could not get the bill to pass. So, for now at least, and this will be day by day, we held the line. It feels pretty good. It really does. We have to celebrate the wins. Jay Clayton was up for confirmation on Thursday for chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC. The SEC's mission is to protect regular Americans from Wall Street fraud, to maintain fair, orderly, and efficient markets, to help our country's economy grow. Jay Clayton's 15-year career representing the biggest interest on Wall Street alone should have made him unfit to serve in this capacity. But in addition to shielding big banks from taking full responsibility in the 2008 financial crisis that crashed the economy, he has represented foreign corporate interest against corruption charges as well. His wife is a vice president at Goldman Sachs, and he is currently a partner at a law firm specializing in Wall Street's interest. As Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat of Ohio, stated, it's hard to see how an attorney who spent his career helping Wall Street beat the rap will stop big banks and hedge funds from getting away with murder. Also confirmed was David Friedman as the next ambassador of Israel. I'm going to read directly from Jewish Voices for Peace on the site Common Dreams, who lauded the state's unprecedented opposition to Friedman's nomination. Jewish Voices for Peace's members are inspired by Jewish tradition to work together for peace, social justice, equality, human rights, respect for international law, and U.S. foreign policy based on these ideals. This was their response. We applaud those senators who voted against President Trump's appointment of David Friedman as U.S. ambassador to Israel. The unprecedented opposition to Friedman is a sign of his unfitness for the office and growing opposition to settlements and Israeli policies that deny Palestinians full and equal rights. David Friedman has demonstrated his dedication to advancing Israel's illegal settlement enterprise and used hateful and hurtful speech towards Palestinians and Muslims as well as Jewish critics of Israeli occupation. Friedman's statements and position should have disqualified him from this appointment. The vote to approve David Friedman's nomination passed along nearly party lines, a sign of the growing partisan divide over support for Israel. According to the Pew Research Center poll, from January 2017, the divide between Democrats and Republicans over support for Israel is wider than it has been in decades. After nearly 50 years of military occupation and decades more of displacement and discrimination against Palestinians, support for Palestinian rights is growing. This broad opposition to Friedman's nomination is a testament to the efforts of grassroots activists around the country. Constituents are working to hold their elected officials accountable to resist resisting Trump's agenda and to a vision of equal rights and justice for all people, both in the Middle East and the United States. While this wasn't a win for us in the resistance, at least our efforts, their efforts, have been registered.
This is what democracy looks like!
As we all continue to make our voices heard, we find ourselves in the middle of a crisis of democracy. And that is a great thing. I will let the esteemed Noam Chomsky, the American linguist, philosopher, cognitive scientist, historian, social critic, and political activist explain.
What's the crisis of democracy that they're concerned with in all of the democratic societies? Well, the crisis is that during the 1960s, large groups of people who are normally passive and apathetic began to try to enter the political arena to press their demands. And that's a crisis which has to be overcome. The naive might call that democracy, but that's because they don't understand. The sophisticated understand that that's a crisis of democracy. The American spokesman, again, Samuel Huntington, wrote in his report that Harry Truman had been able to govern the country with the cooperation of a relatively small number of Wall Street lawyers and bankers. In those days, there was no crisis of democracy. Things were working just right. But in the 1960s, you got all this turmoil. I mean, young people and women and, you know, labor. I mean, all kinds of weird people who were supposed to be sitting quietly in the corners began to get involved and caused this crisis. I mean, the same crisis that arose in the 17th century and that repeatedly arises when people begin to try to take advantage of the formal opportunities that exist. Among the terrible things that were happening during the 60s causing this crisis, they said, was that you had this group of people who they called value-oriented intellectuals. People who are concerned with things like truth and justice and all that sort of nonsense, and they're opposed to the good guys, the technocratic and policy-oriented intellectuals, they called them, the commissars, the ones who just do the job, you know. But you had these value-oriented intellectuals, and they were doing all sorts of horrible things like delegitimizing the institutions that are responsible for the indoctrination of the young, like schools and universities. Remember, this is an internal discussion, so they kind of let their hair down. Their general proposal at the end of all of this, these lengthy and thoughtful discussions, was that what we need is more moderation in democracy to mitigate the excess of democracy and to overcome the crisis. In plain terms, what that means is that the public has to be reduced to their proper state of apathy and obedience and driven from the public arena if democracy is to survive in the appropriate sense, with the specialized class, you know, the cool observers, smart guys, the technocratic and policy-oriented intellectuals, doing our job in the interests of the people who have real power.
I pulled that clip from Citizen Truth, which is the work of passionate citizens dedicated to finding the truth, ending the left-right paradigm, and widening the scope of viewpoints and ideas represented in the mainstream. They are a nonpartisan organization funded by their own dollars and donations. Their articles and videos are thought-provoking. They will make you question things as they are, something I think this country could use. Find them at citizentruth.org. Anyway, we are witnessing a democratic uprising. As he explained, like the protest of the 60s, people are participating in the democratic process, making their voices heard. Our democracy did not recently become threatened. It has been threatened since we went back to sleep in the 70s and stopped participating. We let government rule for special interest and interest run the government for decades and then cried foul when we realized that they were not serving us. We were complicit. Those who do not vote, those who plead ignorance, those who throw up their hands. We all played a role in where we are now, and we have to own that. I am pleased to see that we are in a crisis of democracy, because that means that we are active and making government and big business nervous, that they will lose their power to act not for the people, but despite us. So long as we hold the line, we could come out of this not only with our republic intact, but transformed. One with an informed, civic-minded populace. One with a more representative government. I don't know. What do you think? Okay. Unless you live blissfully in a cave, something I envy you for. You know that hearings for our next Supreme Court nominee have been this week. And a term we have been hearing a lot is cloture. Cloture is the only procedure through which the Senate can vote to place a time limit on consideration of a bill or other matter, and hereby overcome a filibuster. Under the cloture rule, the Senate may limit consideration of a pending matter to 30 additional hours, but only by a vote of 3/5. Of the full Senate. Normally, that's about 60 votes. Basically, it is the vote to end debate and take a vote. To vote no on cloture is to vote no on voting. Neil Gorsuch, the seat-stealing far-right originalist, is the man of the hour. And the hearings have been, well, pointless theater. Gorsuch presents himself well and, like the nominees before him, has perfected the art of not answering any questions. Not that the answers would hold him to anything anyway. The Dems did an okay job and spoke much about the injustice dealt to Merrick Garland. But we can have pride in our Senate minority leader for saying this.
After careful deliberation, I have concluded that I cannot support Judge Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court. His nomination will have a cloture vote. He will have to earn 60 votes for confirmation. My vote will be no, and I urge my colleagues to do the same. To my Republican friends who think that if Judge Gorsuch fails to reach 60 votes, we ought to change the rules, I say if this nominee cannot earn 60 votes, a bar met by each of President Obama's nominees, and George Bush's last two nominees, the answer isn't to change the rules. It's to change the nominee.
Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, has proven himself as a voice of the resistance this week. A few others agreed to filibuster as well, but we need more. If you vote no on cloture, you're voting not to vote. As Chuck Schumer said in a follow-up tweet, the Judge Gorsuch nomination will face a cloture vote. And as I have said, he'll have to earn 60 votes for confirmation, and my vote will be no. Republicans eager to confirm Gorsuch before their Easter recess begins, April 7th, will only have the 52-senator majority. They have said Gorsuch will be confirmed, even if it means removing the filibuster option and allowing Supreme Court nominees to be confirmed to their lifetime appointments with a simple majority vote. Democratic vote counters are confident that they have more than 40 votes needed to sustain the filibuster, at least for a time. Currently, 48 senators caucus with the Democrats, including two who were elected as independents. That leaves Senate Republicans with two paths. One option, they could have repeated cloture votes to test whether some Democrats, especially those from states carried by Trump in the presidential election, might break ranks after a symbolic vote or two. The other option would be to move immediately to change Senate rules and allow confirmation with only 51 votes. That's nuclear, to get rid of the filibuster. Right now, the resistance is tasked with calling our senators and pushing them to filibuster Gorsuch, or complimenting them on choosing to filibuster Gorsuch. Filibuster is a big move, and it will ultimately end in losing the filibuster, but there is no point in saving the filibuster. We're going to lose it in the future anyways. If going to the mat over a stolen lifetime appointment is not worth it, then I don't know what is. Do you think states should be able to maintain their own restrictions on concealed carry? Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, and his fellow Republicans don't. They have proposed the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act of 2017, a pair of bills introduced to the House and the Senate. These bills would require that citizens who are allowed to carry concealed weapons in their own home states be allowed to carry their weapons in every other state. Under this legislation, residents of states that do not require concealed carry permits could travel to any other state and carry their concealed weapon without a permit. Law enforcement organizations, including Law Enforcement Coalition for Common Sense, have opposed concealed carry reciprocity, noting that it would make it nearly impossible for police to confirm if a person with a concealed weapon is carrying the weapon legally. Additionally, Senator Cornyn's law would allow gun owners to sue police for even attempting to to verify the status of their permits, according to Trace and Everytown for gun safety. What happened to states' rights? 39 states require gun safety training for any concealed carry permit applicant. At least 30 states ban convicted domestic abusers from having gun permits, and 28 states bar convicted stalkers from having permits. You know, logic. Under the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, these popular common sense gun control measures would be invalidated. Permitless concealed carry would become legal in every state. Republicans claim to respect state-level legislation, yet this is a blatant attempt to use federal law to contravene states' gun control measures. Call, write, send candygrams to your representatives, and donate to Everytown for Gun Safety. They're still doing good work, regardless of impossible odds.
On Thursday, the 18th of October, 1945, in Berlin, the indictment was lodged with the tribunal.
Thus spoke Lord Justice Lawrence on day one of the 10-month drama now ended at Nuremberg. To answer came Goering, except for Hitler, head of the Nazi state. Now he will die, hanged by the neck like a common criminal. Lest pity be felt for him and his kind, remember, this man burned the proud cities of Britain. From the skies came death, and those who died as here in Coventry, they do not forget. Of the accused, 12 hang, 3 go to life imprisonment, 3 from 10 to 20 years. Here is Wilhelm Keitel. This man, once a field marshal, sent German armies over Europe and Western Russia. He too will hang. But that will not wash away his crimes, nor bring back our dead. Among those sentenced was Baldur von Schirach. He will serve 20 years in prison. But the evil he implanted in the young men and women of Germany will take more than 20 years to destroy. Now the defendants know who is to die. But we speak for the millions killed because of them. The burned towns, the widows, the fatherless, and the unspeakable horrors of the murder camps. This was the work of the Führers. Let us now have done with them forever.
Does anyone doubt the rule in which our president esteems to have over us? He is not Hitler yet, or even Mussolini. In these times had a great article warning not to wait for Nuremberg. We cannot wait till it is too late to act. The Nuremberg trials, held in the city of Nuremberg, Germany, were a series of military tribunals held by the Allied forces not till after World War II. The trials prosecuted the men who planned, carried out, or otherwise participated in the Holocaust and other war crimes. Essentially, they prosecuted members of the political, military, judicial, and economic leadership of Nazi Germany. The decisions at the trials marked a turning point between classical international law and contemporary international law. While the trials brought a small amount of justice to the unjustifiable and irredeemable, the Nuremberg trials happened far, far too late to stop Hitler. A dictator is only so strong as his foot soldiers. One of the uncomfortable realities of the Holocaust is the men who carried it out were by and large ordinary men, fathers and husbands who enjoyed dancing and music. They were neighbors and friends, yet at the end they committed unimaginable crimes and atrocities. Scholars of authoritarianism agree that we are on a dangerous path. Robert Paxton of Columbia University warns, "There is not much doubt of the desire of Trump to govern as a dictator. Hitler and Mussolini could have been blocked, even legally. People have to use the tools available to them to block Trump." We have talked on this show before about the protections our framers put in place to prevent such a leader. King, dictator, what have you. Those protections rest in the checks and balances of the various branches of government. The design was created that those in government would be more loyal to their office than that to a party or self. Our fundamentals of government have been suffering under partisan politics. When the allegiance to party is greater than that to of office of country or to the people, our protections falter. We become a partiocracy rather than a democracy. Would-be dictators depend on others, normal people, to carry out their orders. When the Muslim ban came down, some citizens were held for as much as 20 hours, handcuffed, some with little food, water, translators, wheelchairs, children even. They were forced to open their phones. 60 green card holders reportedly were forced or coerced to waive their rights. They were treated like criminals and terrorists for having done nothing wrong. It was gross proof of how ordinary people, fathers, mothers, friends, Netflix and chillers, Disney lovers, or Simpsons watchers can inflict cruelty without question by obeying orders. Ordinary Americans, a dictator is only so strong as each person who is willing to carry out his orders. It is up to us to empower individuals to refuse to carry out unlawful or inhumane orders. And laws. Laws need to be made to ensure federal employees do not act in such a way again, which, of course, is Congress's purview. We must push for that, and also to continue to push for Congress to do its job and use its power to provide oversight and conduct investigations through hearings on the Muslim ban and its implementation. Should the reports be accurate, why did the federal employees enact the orders they did with such cruelty? Were they ordered to? Was there recourse if they chose not to act in such a way? As of now, the reports of what happened in these rooms under the Muslim ban is unconfirmed, which is exactly why Congress needs to investigate. Something they will only do if the citizens demand it. And in the absence of Congress willing to serve the people or the office for which they hold, we must push to empower federal employees to stand up to him and his orders. It is not too late. Let us not wait for our own Nuremberg trials. Okay, I came across something that seems pretty exciting for those of us in the resistance or at all excited about activism. Holmes Wilson and Tiffany Cheng, who were two of the driving forces between two of the biggest victories for grassroots power in the past decade. The 2015 victory for net neutrality, something that we might be facing again, and the 2012 victory against SOPA and PIPA. The Stop Online Piracy Act and the Protection IP Act, PIPA. They're bills that were introduced into the United States House and the Senate in 2011. Both are responses to the problem of the enforcement of U.S. laws against websites outside U.S. jurisdiction. Anyways, neither of those things were supposed to be winnable. Insiders said they were crazy for even trying. Both were against the most powerful corporate lobbies in America, the media and the pharmaceutical lobbies, MPPA and Pharma on SOPA and PIPA, and the cable and telecom lobby, NCTA, on the net neutrality issue. Well, they have this pitch to make. You are a talented human with a broad set of skills. You can speak, write, pitch, and persuade. You can make a PowerPoint or make art. You work every day solving problems. You get a ton done. You can call Congress and attend a protest, and you should. But is that it? Why stop there? Why set aside everything you've learned, everything you are, to be simply one more terrified person on a phone line or marching on a street? What if you did the following as well? 1. Find someone you love to work with. 2. Pick an issue, area, and angle. 3. Do activism full-time, using every connection, skill, tool, and trick at your disposal, until you win. Our goal? To convince you to take exactly these steps, give you a playbook, and fund you. They want to pay you to work full-time as an activist. Basically, they're looking for groups of people who can get together, work full-time on an issue, and they want people to form teams, aid teams. And these teams will be funneled money. I put a link to all of this on my Facebook page, K-Voice of Resistance, and they go into a lot of explanation and a lot of detail, and then where you can go to sign up or at least explore more options. The funding is coming from Fight for the Future, which is dedicated to protecting enhancing and expanding the internet's transformative power in our lives by creating civic campaigns that are engaged for millions of people. So they, in conjunction with Fight for the Future, have funding. And if you're already doing this, why not get paid for it? I don't know. I think it's really cool. I think it's a great opportunity, and check it out. Okay, we have a call to action. We need to fight to prevent budget cuts to environmental programs. Trump's budget proposal would cut the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA's funding by 31%, eliminating 3,200 jobs, 50 programs, and $100 million in funding for climate change programs. The budget also slashes funding for cleanup for hazardous industrial waste at Superfund sites. In addition to eviscerating the EPA, Trump's budget proposal reduces funding for other agencies working on climate change and renewable energy. The proposition would eliminate the Department of Energy's funding for advancing energy and vehicle research, eliminate the UN-affiliated Green Climate Fund and Global Climate Change Initiative, reduce funding for the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy, and end funding for NASA's missions to monitor Earth's oceans and carbon dioxide levels. The proposal to eliminate renewable energy funding is particularly problematic from an economic perspective. Since renewable energy jobs are growing exponentially, the solar sector alone generated one in every 83 new jobs in 2015. According to the Solar Foundation, Trump proposed these cuts despite the clear, pressing threat that climate change represents to our health, environment. Since, James Mattis has noted, national security. In proposing dramatic cuts to these agencies that conduct crucial research on climate change and renewable energy, Trump's budget outline threatens American jobs, health, and safety. Call your representatives about this. We cannot give up on the environment yet. And after you're done doing that, the next day, call your reps about not defunding the arts and humanities programs. Elmo needs us.
Elmo!
Okay, Elmo has a contract with HBO, so he will be fine. But how many kids will lose out for not being able to pay for HBO? The kids need us.
Is there anyone Elmo can contact?
Call your representative and ask him to save block grants. Like Meals on Wheels, the elderly and the infirm need us. We are the resistance. And there is an endless amount of ways to resist 45 and the GOP. Read Indivisible and follow their steps. Check out the Resistance Calendar at resistancecalendar.org. Get creative. Tell state legislators it's time to get rid of the Electoral College. Call Congress at 202-225-3121. You can donate to the ACLU and help fight back to defend our freedom. You can run for office, school board, local council, or dog catcher, whatever. Vote for local. Perilously few good people are doing this, and some frighteningly stupid people are winning as a result. If you're a young woman, check out Running Start, and check out She Should Run as well. Keep a sense of humor. It will keep you sane, and it can be a very powerful way to communicate a message. Register to vote, and then vote. I'll say it again. Register to vote, and then vote. Keep up with the latest progressive news for activism and opportunities. Daily Kos is good. The Resistance Report with Robert Reich is excellent. Talking Points Memo are particularly good sources. Make a special effort to reach out to people in groups who may feel especially targeted by 45's rhetoric and his actions. Let them know they have support. Push our elected officials to hold hearings on conflict of interest issues, as outlined in the Constitution. See the Emoluments Clause. In your communications with Congress, point out that the Democrats won by over 2 million votes. There is no mandate here, and they need to serve all the needs of all Americans. If you see news stories that are normalizing the regime of 45, see if the reporter has an email listed. If they do, send the reporter an email about it. Donate to the Natural Resource Defense Council. Those folks are a savvy group of environmental lawyers, and we'll need them in the coming years. Think of the NRDC as the ACLU of the environmental movement. Attend the town hall meetings of the U.S. representatives and senators. Dress up and come armed with facts and bring a dozen friends. This is just a few. I posted a link on my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance to a site that has 99 ways to resist Trump. That's about all the time I have. Thank you for listening to my show. And thank you for resisting in all the ways that you do. Hit me up on my page at K-Voice of Resistance or on Twitter at Kelly the Voice. Please help me out and leave me a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you are getting my show. It helps my show to get out there and to spread the resistance word. Also, check out other great programming on crabdiving.com. New shows of mine drop Tuesdays and Fridays. Take care of yourself out there. And as always, resist.
This is what democracy looks like!